Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. Disrespect welcomes Cindy Lou Bergdahl, historical costume reproduction designer. And today, she might tell us how she plans to pass on the skills that she has as her disability advances and she grows older, which sounds like a terribly tragic story, but it's not. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
Okay. Why don't you tell me and the listener what it is that you've done for a living and how unusual you've found it to be?
I worked at a historical site out west doing costumes for the interpreters and those that were actual paid staff in doing the interpretive work. And it's a lot of research and reproducing all the styles and whatnot that from the eras, because we represented different eras, mm-hmm. and it's just another way of interpreting history. Mm-hmm. But you have to be accurate, because some people can be fooled, but we wanted to do it as truthful as possible. So I've always been one that paid close attention to detail and loved history, so I kind of naturally fell into it, being that I've always enjoyed costuming too.
How'd you get your start?
Oh, again, just always in costuming, and had visited this site once for a friend's wedding, because we were looking at doing the wedding and the reception out there, and found out in dealing with the staff, getting involved with that, that they really didn't have anyone to tend to their department as far as costumes goes on a full-time basis.
Who's
the gal, I was working for the Edmonton Historical Foundation.
Oh, okay.
For Fort Edmonton. And the gal that preceded me had other functions with the city facility. So she wasn't just a costumer. It just kind of fell under her umbrella. Mm-hmm. So I kind of worked my way in and saw that there was a need to be filled, and got to know them a little more and just made myself indispensable. Walked into it, kind of thing.
Isn't that funny? That's how I got into this show. You're still involved, but you've begun to see an occasion arising when you may have to relinquish your role as a historical costume designer.
Very
How'd that
much
come
so.
About?
Very much so. 6 years ago, I was in a small car accident that left me with some neurological and wonderful soft tissue damage and eyesight and that kind of thing. And I no longer can do a lot of the physical aspects of designing and need better eyesight. Mm-hmm. I no longer can thread a needle like I used to. Bending over a table and designing the patterns and sitting at a sewing machine, those things are sadly behind me now.
Oh, really?
And so I don't have the physical body, but I certainly have the equipment and the resources and the designs in my head, patterns, you name it. I have all that kind of thing. So I basically need a warm body to act as, well, what I used to do.
All right.
You know, I need them to do it for me. I no longer can take it from my mind out to my hands anymore. I need.
Okay. Yeah. So you have somebody like this from time to time now, right? But even this, you can see, the need for someone like this growing. Is that what you see?
Well, I haven't done a lot since moving to Hamilton 6 years ago after the accident. It took me a while to figure out that I couldn't do it myself, and it was quite a hard pill to swallow and accept that I couldn't. But now that I have, I know that I would really like to have someone step in to be that person that I can pass it off to at some point in time.
Okay. So you've gone through this process of accepting your changing ability to do this work, and as you mentioned, it was not an easy process in the beginning. Could this work go to someone who has to face the same thing over a longer time scale? Could this work go to someone who can carry it forward now but could see a time in the future when they couldn't? I guess everybody ages. I mean, for everybody, there's a time in the future when
certainly.
They can't.
Everyone ages. There's no doubt about that. And we all get to the point in our life where we just can't do the things we used to.
Yeah.
So certainly there could be someone like that. It's a lot of yardage, so at the back is very important, and the eyesight's equally as important.
Right.
It's mostly someone with a good attention to detail as far as that goes. That's the biggest thing, is knowing what button to put on what decade or that kind of thing. So
this is something you can give them a head start with.
Absolutely.
You probably give them a head start on where to find out what you can't tell them too, which is maybe the most important thing.
Very much so, and where to shop for it, and what to look for, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What kind of skills can you still carry forward, and what kind of, you mentioned briefly what kind of skills you let go. So how does the overlap work for you to bring somebody into your field, into your area of expertise?
Well, simply the fact that I have the research in my head.
Okay.
I have all the, for this era, you need that kind of button and that kind of silhouette and that kind of thing. So I could save someone an awful lot of research and doing that on their own because I already have that, so I could share that. And as far as technical skills, there's certainly certain kinds of seams and finishes and fabric types and things not to use, and well, that doesn't work for that era, and the silhouette's different in this one, and that kind of thing.
So you give them a grounding in context, in historical context, an understanding of the march of history through costumes and clothes, but you could also give them a knowledge of, it almost comes down to technique, what's the word? You know the word, but I mean, the choice of fabrics and seams and things like that, What word would you use for that?
Well, it's all very finite as far as era, and especially in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
One can look at old photos and even photos here in Hamilton and almost nail it down to within a few years.
Wow.
What the time is just by looking at their outfits.
Really?
You can.
Why? How so accurate?
It's just history. I mean, it's a matter of
fashion.
If you look through old Sears catalogs,
yeah,
you can see, okay, 1906, to 1911, they were this style, that kind of thing. So definitely, it breaks down very individually like that.
Okay. Now, the people that you work with now, what do you do for them and what do they do for you? You've brushed once over lightly, but maybe you could give us a little more detail. What's someone stepping into the shoes that you envision would where they would start?
Well, right now, I don't really do a lot of it because most of it is all in storage right now. I have packed
most
it up.
Of your equipment.
My equipment, my patterns, all my resources, yes. Just because I haven't been able to do it, so I found myself, you know, struggling with the system and trying to get by on my own, and the whole workshop and studio has had to be put on hold, but put on hold only. I don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
It probably isn't a whole lot of work to anyone who doesn't do this kind of thing. It would just be a bunch of machines and paper and needles and that kind of thing. But to someone who has that kind of interest, it's a phenomenal step up because I've already got it there and I'd love to share it with someone. But that interest really has to be there. It's very finite work. It's very time-consuming and fussy work. So it has to almost be someone who's almost a perfectionist like me that...
Yeah.
Loves history and wants it brought forward.
Loves the detail of it.
Absolutely, a lot of detail.
But there's a market for this too, isn't there? I mean, there are people who are willing to pay for that kind of self-torture, if you will. That, you know, I mean, just like a writer spends many hours alone, you spend many hours alone when you worked, poring over, I'm sure, catalogs and methods of making clothes and the resulting effects on the fashion of the day. There's a market for people who care about or are willing to care about stuff like that.
Absolutely. It's very specialized work. There's no doubt about it. A lot of, you know, like at Stratford or any of the historical sites, that kind of thing. Not a lot as far as theater goes.
Yes, and
they'll tend to push a few boundaries. The historical sites are of course fussier over what they're representing because they want it to be true.
Yeah.
Whereas theatrical is, they can take a few more liberties. Of course, there's the SCA, the Society for Creative Anachronism, and all the Renaissance people.
Sure?
They love that kind of thing, too. Sure.
Where are they?
Oh, they're all over the place.
Oh, I've never heard of them.
I'm sure you know a lot of people that are into that kind of thing and probably don't know that they go up to Ren Faire occasions on the weekends and stuff like that. It's quite popular.
Oh, okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
this is an environment that somebody who took your work over would have to become involved in. So I think the listener who's interested in what you've done and what you want to do is interested in this too.
There's a lot of different veins that can go on. Again, it's a matter of nailing down a certain period and knowing the research and the history and representing it. There's just certain styles for certain times, and some people will be more wanting to stick to the accuracy of representing that time, mm-hmm. and others will just, give me something that's good to, you know, that will make me look good to go to an event, and they won't necessarily care about the accuracy. So, I mean, there's levels that they can...
But those people would still hire you?
Absolutely, sure, yeah.
Okay, all right. So for people with an interest in this kind of thing, who may not want to take over your work, but nevertheless want to explore it, do you have directions or stores or something that are not trade secrets that you can direct people to who are interested in this kind of thing, might want to explore it?
Well, I'm always willing to share any information I've got. It's a wonderful network, really, when you get into it. There aren't that many women that do. No, I shouldn't say women, because there are a few guys.
Really?
Mostly women, though,
yeah.
that do the historical designing. A lot of volunteers, though, that just want, again, might be just doing the Renaissance thing and just want to know a little bit more, and I'd gladly share that kind of information.
Okay, yeah, share some of it with us now.
Well, it's just a matter of knowing the fabrics, of knowing the patterns, and what went on during that era. So it's a lot of research. It's a lot of...
Can anyone do the research at the retail level? Are there stores where they know these things?
Stores that know them?
No.
Okay. No. Stores that supply the goods, yes, but not as far as getting into the historical aspect. Anyone would have to do that prior to going in the door on their own or, you know, brought someone along with them that would know or something.
So the people who make these things probably know their historical relevance. And the people who design these things probably know the historical relevance. But the people who sell them just take the money.
Often, sadly,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
well,
I mean,
no,
it's
I mean,
a, it's a lot
there.
To know.
I mean,
yeah, you're right. At least they are there, definitely. But it is a lot to know. And a lot of, some people don't care. You know, they will go ahead and buy a polyester and pretend that it's cotton or it's wool or something from the old days. And it suffices for them. So it just depends on their level of what they expect will pass. And
as
what,
it shines under the searchlights.
And
yeah.
Some people are happy with.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Cindy Lou Bergdahl talk about her skills as a historical costume designer, how she's lost them, becoming disabled, and how she wants to pass them on to someone who might be interested, maybe even you. We'll take a break now. Sunnyland Slim at the DC Blues Society live. Got a thing going on.
Do y'all like blues? You like rock and roll? Well, I tell you what we're gonna do. We're gonna do a little thing here. We ain't got my band. say, we're going to try to play some. We're going to try to do it. Don't let me forget you, Conan. Got on. See, look out, Bobby. She likes to look, y'all. You mess around the woman, she gets you hooked. She toss me, she don't wear a lot. Oh, Lord, girl, I know it's right. She got thing going on. She got thing going on. Lord, I'm going to tell her, man. You girl got a thing going on. She wears a mini skirt above her knees. A tight front, you know, but down the sleeves. The thing the girl do, she do a thing. Tell her all around what the girl do. I know she got a thing going on.
In the process of accepting your the loss of your skills, something that someone who takes this on might have to bear in mind when they consider whether they can do the work and whether they can keep it up, and if they see a time when they can, if they're old enough to see a time when they can't, or unwell enough or disabled enough to see a time when they can't, what they would have to go through in passing it on themselves if they wanted to.
I think the hardest thing was the depression over it, just accepting the fact that my life's work as I knew it could no longer be.
Yeah.
That was definitely the hardest thing. And of course, staring at the equipment in my studio, knowing that sitting at the table, I could only be there for 10 minutes instead of the 6 hours or whatever it was going to take to work on that pattern or that kind of thing.
So the stamina, the back that you mentioned, the strong back.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, when you're doing historical especially, there's an awful lot of yardage. So there's a lot of weight.
Really? Oh, because everything was long.
Well, and so full. And,
full?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you have to be strong.
You do. You do. Definitely.
Isn't that something? I would never have picked up on that. And you mentioned your eyesight. That's more to do. You said that something related to the accident impaired your eyesight, but as we all get older, our eyesight usually deteriorates. Is this a function of your accident? Is it a function of your age?
It's a function of my accident, but it certainly happens with all of us. Since the accident, I mean, it's even gotten a bit worse, but that is age now on top of that.
Okay.
The eyesight is very important in the historical aspect when you're dealing with very small buttons or beadwork or wonderful old trims and braids and whatnot that they used to have.
Really?
And a lot of hand-done seams and buttonholes and that kind of thing that are done by machine now and very automatic. So there's a lot of hand craft as far as that goes. So you do need good eyesight for that. And dexterity as far as that goes, too.
Yeah, so something like arthritis would be a real barrier
yes,
to this.
It yeah. would.
That's interesting because what you say brings forward the truth that people didn't used to live as long as we do now. They probably didn't encounter the same obstacles that you are encountering now because they probably didn't get that old.
Absolutely. And they were a whole lot smaller then too. So over the years, no matter how many wonderful finds you come across when you discover, oh, there's a pattern that has never been brought forward. Nobody's ever replicated that. And then you find out that they were so tiny back then.
Yeah.
Or if you come across a piece of an artifact clothing, even at a garage sale or some wonderful find, and it's so tiny that I've dealt with like RCMP uniforms that they were like, well, 5'6" and, you know, like about a size 14, 15 neck wear.
All right.
I mean, that would be a very small man nowadays.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a big man back
then. Sure,
obviously,
it was.
Because he qualified for the RCMP.
You bet. So, I mean,
and what time
humans,
would that be? What period
just 100 years ago, you know.
Wow.
Or a little bit better, but yeah.
Wow.
So people have changed, and everything changes and moves forward and grows, and so you have to adjust for that. So there's all sorts of fun things to it.
Yeah, so in recreating these effects, you're also dealing with effects, but you're dealing with effects of scale. The effects designed to produce one result on a man 5'5" or 5'6" might produce a completely different result on a man 6' or 6'2". And you have to account for that.
Absolutely. And grading old patterns into modern sizes, too, as far as that goes. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
How did you pick that up?
Again,
experience?
By learning and learning from the other women that were doing this at the time that I was doing it out in Alberta and taking great notes and whatnot. And
really?
Oh, goodness, yeah, because it's very finite work because it's a lot of engineering. It's surprising how much engineering actually goes into grading and drafting a pattern and
it modern. I'm trying to think of the word, but I mean the word that comes to mind is anatomy, engineering around anatomy.
We're certainly healthier,
but
the structure is still the same, just a little bit larger and healthier.
Okay.
Probably too healthy in some respects. There weren't so many oversizes back then, but...
No, right, yeah, for sure. Yeah, understandable. There were no Twinkies in 1908,
no,
probably.
We'd still have them in the historical sites because they last a long time, apparently.
Okay. What else would you like the people to know who have been intrigued by what you've just told us and are curious to know more before they even consider what it means to take up your work? Because ultimately, that's what we're about here, is presenting your work and your progress with it in the face of your disability, and the opportunity for a listener to take on or mention to someone else they think might be interested in taking on the work. What else would you like them to know?
Well, the biggest thing with what I've done and what I'd like to do is the fact that while I can't do it anymore, I no longer can do it myself, I have all this...
Equipment.
Well, the equipment and patterns and knowledge, and I want to pass it on. I just don't want it to end with me because it is very important in my, hopefully the listeners, but in my eyesight that this history is brought forward, that this craft and this talent doesn't end with me or whoever else, the few that are doing it out there, that it is brought forward, whether it's someone younger or someone more able or whatever, but just that it doesn't stop because it's our history and it's very important that it is represented and that it's done well. So I would like to share it.
Yeah, we are already talking about the upcoming, I don't know what the word is for it, but the upcoming 150-year anniversary of the founding of Canada in 2017. And I guess the market for this kind of thing can only grow in that context. Even in Hamilton, as the city attracts more and more people who want to work here or people who want to commute to other cities where land and homes are more expensive, the market for the celebration of history is only going to grow because there's so much of it in Hamilton, too.
Well, we're lucky that we do have... We're very rich in history. And it's very colorful. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
I know. It sounds like such a droll subject, but history. But
no, you go back to the War of 1812 and the encampments on York Boulevard, the battles that were fought in the lake, and
all the different uniforms and what they represented. And
yeah, and the gravesites around here,
absolutely.
No doubt. Absolutely. Yeah, and the reenactment every year of the Battle of Stony Creek is one example of it. Yeah.
And they do it well.
Do they?
Sure.
I've been there. It's interesting, but I have no historical yardstick to measure it by. I recommend it to people who have limited concept of what Hamilton's about, or are new to Hamilton, or have grown up in Hamilton and never considered Hamilton's past, that the reenactment of that battle is an eye-opener, especially in light of, for me, in light of the fact that there were no antibiotics in those days and that surgical techniques were only beginning to be developed without a proper understanding of anesthesia or sanitation. The idea that if a musket ball buried itself in your flesh, you know, you were just as likely to die from the infection that followed as you were to recover. It was a brave man who went on the battlefield in those days, and the reenactment brings that home. And I guess all the color and the pageantry of it stands out in stark contrast to the bloody reality too.
But that's also why we didn't live as long then, and smaller, and all those things. It does bear weight onto how it's represented today, but it's still, as far as I'm concerned, it should be represented. Our history is what made us and what brought us here. And Hamilton's very colorful that way. All of Canada is, for that matter.
Okay.
I was very blessed as a young girl. I can remember going over to my grandmother's, and she was actually having an old-fashioned quilting bee.
Wow.
So I learned that kind of thing as a wee girl. And, a lot of people can't say that these days.
No, that's
so it's
true.
Quite something, all these women sitting around this vast frame and you know, chatting up a storm as their needles were going through the fabric and thimbles and that kind of thing.
Apparently it's undergone a resurgence. I've read that quilting has in some ways come back, but it is like a hobby. It's like you either choose to do it or you don't. It's not like every girl learns this at her mother's or grandmother's knee.
Very much a hobby. It's also so labor-intensive that, it certainly never pays to do it. Because, well, as with most old handcrafts, as far as that goes. But again, the quilting is just one of the things that I can share with, you know, whoever would care to be an apprentice kind of thing, or whoever just wants to know. But there's a lot of techniques, different lacing techniques, making laces and beadwork and that kind of thing. And they're all very labor-intensive that do not pay now, but historically, it would be a shame for those things to die off and no one know how to do them.
Yeah.
It's much like a lot of the old crafts, not just sewing and whatnot, but it's just nice that somebody brings them forward.
For someone who wants to pass on, who wants you to pass on their skills to them, or wants to discuss this with you, how would they get in contact with you? This is a difficult thing right now for you, isn't it?
It is.
Do you have webmail?
It's V as in Victor, I-X, it's Vix Graphics.
Okay, V-I-X-G-R-A-P-H-I-X.
But with X's, yes.
Okay, well, we've got
that. Gmail.
At gmail.com. All right, and do you access that often?
I do on a regular basis.
Is that the optimal contact?
That's the optimal right now, because I am kind of in a transitionary phase, so.
All right, fair enough.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's, as you know, I always like to talk about it, so I'll gladly talk to anybody about it.
Okay, good. So let's give that email address out again. It's Vix Graphics, V-I-X-G-R-A-P-H-I-X,
@gmail.com. It is.
Thanks very much, Cindy Lou.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
All right.
You've been listening to Cindy Lou Bergdahl talk about her skills as a historical costume designer, how she's lost them, becoming disabled, and how she wants to pass them on to someone who might be interested, maybe even you. Now, maybe it's time for a little break. Kenny Blues Boss Wayne, Kitsilano Stomp. we have some news. March 17, 2009, Toronto Star. Mayor seeks new rules after march turns violent. Montreal Mayor Gerald Tremblay wants protesters to march along pre-established routes during future rallies after police were pelted with bricks, bottles, and food Sunday during a protest organized by the Collective Opposed to Police Brutality. Police arrested 221 people. At least 32 face serious charges. We didn't have a lot of coverage of this event in the other papers, but in the Star, on Monday, March the 16th, we do have a picture on page A6 called Taking It to the Streets. Nova Scotia, also from the Star, I don't have a date. Staff on smoke breaks let infirm patients alone. A Nova Scotia Health Department report says staff at a nursing home left infirm patients unattended while they went for smoke breaks, including one occasion when a resident was left lying on a bathroom floor. Michael, this story's for you. The three employees in a unit at a home in Antigonish took their cigarette breaks together outdoors four times during the May 5th to 6th night shift. The case was investigated under the province's recently created Protection of Persons in Care Act. I wonder if we should argue for such a thing in Ontario. Good news, you probably already have it. Spectator Council halts proposed transit fare hike. The city's rejected a transit fare increase again. City councillors voted 8-7 to maintain fare price, $2.40 cash and $1.85 for a ticket for 2009. Transit staff said the fare increase was no longer necessary because the department found other savings to reduce its budget. A reduction in the budget fuel price saved $1 million, while an increase in ridership generated $1.2 million. Taser news goes on and on. Gary Mason in the Globe, March the 7th. Decision not to charge in Taser case stands on ever more shaky ground. Recent allegations of fraudulent statements and a planned cover-up are leading to loud calls for a new look at the December decision by the BC Crown Council's office to clear the four RCMP officers involved in the tragic encounter with Polish immigrant Robert Zakanski. Citizens who were outraged when the decision was made not to press charges against any of the officers are even more incensed after hearing three of them testify at a hearing into Mr. Zakanski's death. They learned that notes and verbal statements the officers gave to investigators weren't an accurate reflection of what happened that night. At this point, the decision is the decision, the Criminal Justice Branch spokesman told Globe and Mail columnist Gary Mason. The provincial government has been embarrassed by this matter. My guess is that could change. Too soft on police. This is the National Post. Bet you never thought you'd see that title here. This is Father Raymond J. D'Souza. Had it been left up to those in the employ of the state, Robert Zakanski's death would have been quietly covered up. My colleague Lauren Gunter is a friend and a journalist who follows the evidence wherever it leads, even if it hits close to home. It's made him a one-man truth squad on climate change, healthcare, and much else. And the evidence from the Zakanski inquiry in Vancouver led him to confess that he was very wrong in defending the RCMP officers who pumped Mr. Zakanski five times with a taser, leaving him dead. Even though the inquiry is not complete, it's already clear that Mr. Zakanski would be alive if the RCMP had not acted, as Mr. Gunter puts it, rashly, hastily, and excessively. Does being tough on crime require being soft on the police? If government bureaucrats had said the Canadian Wheat Board had acted unprofessionally and then cooked up a story to excuse their malfeasance, conservative commentators would have flayed them mercilessly, but dress the government officials up in red serge and give them a gun, and the benefit of the doubt is to be extended even over the body of a dead man. The Mounties expressed regret over the incident, but also said they would react the same way if they had to do it all over again. Other state agents, the police-friendly prosecutors, have seen to it that there will be no criminal charges, despite the catalog of lies told by the officers involved. It's the kind of bureaucratic fiasco that does not surprise conservative-minded Canadians when it comes to health care, the postal service, military procurement, or the gun registry. So why, when it comes to the police and the prosecutorial state, are we as conservatives so willing to extend the benefit of the doubt? A similar story, this from the Globe. The Ashley Smith case, court transcripts revealed. Instructed to curtail crushing red tape, guards watched girl die in her cell. Court transcripts about Ashley Smith's 2007 death obtained by the Globe and Mail show that prison managers were trying to curtail the reviews and paperwork triggered each time guards entered her cell to stop her frequent attempts at self-asphyxiation. A manager testified she was pressured to reclassify incident reports so that they wouldn't be filed as use-of-force interventions, which require more red tape. Also, the transcripts reveal that Mrs. Smith was to be transferred to a psychiatric hospital, but there were no beds available, so she was still in her cell when she died. In addition, the prison ignored a grievance she had filed seeking to end her segregation. The complaint wasn't opened until after her death. Her story, A Tale of Death and Red Tape Run Amok, will get more attention with the release of Correctional Investigator Howard Saper's report on her case. That from the Tuesday, March the 3rd Globe and Mail. Also in the Globe and Mail on the Ashley Smith case, the family of Ashley Smith, the troubled teenager who choked to death in her cell at 19 while guards watched, want names. Fighting back tears almost 18 months after her daughter died, Coralie Smith called on the federal government to name the Corrections Canada officials responsible for shuffling her daughter from jail to jail and keeping her in solitary confinement without review in violation of the law. Toronto Star, March 9th, square peg beaten down by system, Rosie DiMano. Excerpt from Ashley Smith's journal, September 4th, 2006. Most people are scared to die. It can't be any worse than living a life like mine. Being dead, I think, would just suit me fine. People say there's nothing wrong with me. Honestly, I think they need to F off because they don't know what goes on in my head. When I used to try to hang myself, I was just messing around trying to make them care and pay attention. Now, it's different. I went to court yesterday and I thought he was going to send me to adult. Time is running out. My chances are getting fewer and fewer. F, I give up. I'm done trying. A month later, the 18-year-old was indeed transferred to an adult closed security facility. That's prison in plain language, despite her youth status. She would be repeatedly tasered 7 times in 26 days, pepper sprayed, locked down in solitary for 23 hours a day, forcibly medicated and placed in the hideous wrap restraint, bound head to toe, unable to budge, hockey helmet jammed over her head lest she topple over or try to bite. New Brunswick's ombudsman and child and youth advocate would later write, "I challenge anyone with a sane mind to live in conditions similar to the ones described for half the time Ashley had to endure. Surely there is a better way." Her crimes, the acts that provoked ever more punitive discipline, included an aversion to strip searches, refusal to hand over a pencil, verbal abuse of staff, smearing feces on the wall, biting, spitting, constantly tacking toilet paper or bits of cloth over her cell window. It was this defiance that apparently needed crushing. However disturbed, rebellious as an adolescent, Ashley Smith was sane. It was the adults, screws and jailers and clipboard clods, who made her crazy. But she never did surrender. March 13th, Toronto Star, Whitmer pressures province on seniors' care. Ontario seniors languish in long-term care homes without enough support to bathe, dress, or go to the washroom, say advocates who are pressing the government to make sure each resident gets 3 hours of personal care a day. Premier Dalton McGuinty should use funding in the March 26 budget to ensure those in long-term facilities receive that 3 hours of care, said Conservative MPP Elizabeth Whitler, a former health minister who held a news conference at Queen's Park. Health ministry officials say the government has raised the level of paid daily care to 3.26 hours a day, working toward 3.5 hours by 2011. Donna Rubin, CEO of Ontario Association of Nonprofit Homes and Services for Seniors, said paid daily care does not translate into hands-on personal care, and more hiring of personal support workers and nurses is needed. And the sum up leading to the budget, March the 26th. Toronto Star, March the 17th. Sarah Blackstock, Pat Capone, and Janet Gasparini from the 25 and 5 Network for Poverty Reduction. Bad economy, no reason for cold feet on poverty reduction. Timely investments will reduce poverty but also stimulate local economies. The unemployment situation is going from bad to worse in Ontario as the effects of a global recession make their way into this province. Without adequate EI, the majority of unemployed Ontarians will be forced to apply for social assistance, and those who end up on social assistance live in abject poverty. This is just one reason that our communities are calling on the McGuinty government to invest in Ontario's poverty reduction strategy, starting with the March 26th budget. Abandoning the poor during economic downturn is not the kind of leadership Ontarians envision for the government. Now is not a time for cold feet. It is a time for bold action. Now more than ever, we turn to our government to meet its commitment. And that's the news. That email again is dialogue@radio.fm. We're also looking for a new segment for the show. Carter Baluni looks as if he'll be securing his release in the next 2 or 3 months, and we won't be talking to him after that time. Once our blind musician is accepted as a Canadian citizen, we'd like to know what you'd like to do with that time. It's not only 10 minutes, it can extend to 20. more likely 10 or 15. Could be two things. We want you to tell us, okay, before we pick something and hear from you that you'd rather were something else. Again, the email, dialogue@radio.fm, D-I-A-L-O-G-U-E at radio.fm. Send us your suggestions, and, you know, maybe you'll be the one to help shape the future show. And now, blind and in sanctuary in St. Gabriel's Church in Montreal, we have Cater Balloony. It's been a long time. It's been 3 weeks. You sound healthier than the last time I spoke to you.
Yeah, I'm
only a little.
Last 2 weeks I was like...
I know. And the week before.
Yeah.
So you're pretty well over it.
Yeah, it's not... last week I had a big cold too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had infection in my leg, my two both legs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and... Yeah, but now it's over. Just my right leg stay like
sore.
Give me like a sore, but that's it. But like
okay,
but the doctor give me like antibiotic cream.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm doing now. It's like
oh good.
But I had big pain, like electricity shock on my legs, like my left legs.
Oh,
yeah, it's like muscle problem I think.
Oh,
but now. But now anymore, that's it. That this is the first time I did my exercise more like.
Today.
Yeah, just today, more than 11 days.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. No wonder you were out of breath when I called the first time.
Yeah.
First time in 11 days. Yeah.
Yeah, but I did my exercise, but like I don't know why I feel sore again in my right leg. Give me the pain now. I don't know how.
You still have the cream?
Yeah, but like now when I'm talking to you,
yeah,
I have the pain.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe when I was exercising.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I'm getting ready to move. I'm trying to find the energy, the day after daylight saving time, I'm trying to find the energy to clean out the apartment and put everything into boxes. But it's not easy on this day. I don't know if daylight saving time, how it affects you, but everybody else is half asleep today, including me. Or at least I was before I came here.
Yeah.
Do they have anything like daylight saving time in Algeria?
Hmm?
In Algeria, do they have anything like daylight saving time?
Saving time?
Daylight saving time? Do the clocks move twice a year?
No.
Oh, okay.
It happened one time in Algeria. That's why I was talking to my friend yesterday.
Yeah?
It happened one time. It's a very funny story.
Okay.
Algeria.
All right.
It's like in the 80s.
Yeah.
The government like take decision to want to change time like Europe and.
Okay.
And he said, okay, like I don't know how many months they're talking on the radio, TV, television because we had, at this time we had only one station radio and one station television.
Oh.
And no stranger TVs or something like that.
Okay.
No parabols, no nothing, no dish, no nothing. Just one station radio and one station television.
Okay.
And the media always talking, and this day we change the hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay. Like, and the population talking between them, you know, the like citizens talking between them, okay, we change the hour.
Yeah.
And like the day when we change the hour,
mm-hmm.
I remember it's a change of Friday. Okay, the Friday no work, okay?
Okay.
The like day off.
Yeah.
Saturday, trust me, Jeff, all the population went late 1 hour for a week. Yeah. Like everything running late.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the government said, no more, this population doesn't work with it.
Well, it happens here, but it's not everybody, that's for sure.
No, it has to be, like everybody.
Right.
Like most of the population, like all most of the population, like went late, at least for the work. Man. And okay. The government said, man, many months we talked, media talking, like everybody went.
All right. April 3rd, it's coming up, your party. How's the planning going for that?
I'm working hard for my music.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I'm working very, very hard for my music.
What are you doing?
You what know, kind I'm, of work? Discovering, I'm discovering the folk music, first folk music.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm discovering this one.
Oh.
Yeah, and I feel like very, I feel very comfortable with this music. All my friends now, encourage me to do it again and again because I think that's my style I love a lot. And I find it, you know, with the guitar, just with the guitar and,
mm-hmm.
you
know. So with the guitar, is it Spanish influence too? Do you think?
No, like country music. I play like a country.
Yeah.
That's the style I'm playing, like folk music, play like a country music.
Oh, okay. No. Well, we'll look forward to seeing some of that up on the web.
Yeah.
I suppose after the party, you'll probably post some, eh? In April? You'll post some on the web?
Yeah,
I look forward to that.
Yeah, maybe I'll post on the web, but for sure, that's now I changed my idea for my next CD.
Well, I guess that's pretty much all the project on your plate that you need, right? You're probably pretty busy with that second CD and the party, and that probably fills your plate.
Yeah, but I said to you, this is 15 days ago, I did nothing, almost just
I know.
Friday and Saturday, and yesterday was so tired I did nothing. But Friday and Saturday, at least I had some practice.
Oh, good.
But yesterday I was so tired,
And you're back to the exercise. That's good.
Yeah. I'm back to exercise, but trust me, I feel my legs it's sore now.
Yeah. Well, the exercise might, if there's anything, infection left, the exercise will probably get the blood flowing and help to remove it. It's the soreness that actually tells you that you're getting better. And that inflammation is a process of getting better, usually. All right, man. Is there anything else you want to say before we go off the air?
The radio is coming on the 20.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, it's coming on the 20, and it's going to be this time, it's going to be just international music.
Oh, good.
For 1 hour, just international music and hold the wall and, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Tell the listeners again the station and the call sign.
Yeah, it's CKUT 90.3 FM.
Right.
Yeah, at 5 to 6.
Very good. On Friday the 20th?
Yeah, on the Friday the 20th.
Very good. Look forward to it.
Yeah, I'm good listening.
Okay. So we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye. That's it for Disrespect this week. Come on back next week for more blues and more entertainment. Taking us out, Big Joe Duskin, Beat Me Daddy, 8 to the Bar.
little Linky Yonky Tonky Village in Texas. That's a guy who played the best piano by far. He can play piano any way that you like it, but the way he liked it best is they thought they fought. Oh, when he jams at the bar, he is the daddy of them all. The people gather around when he gets on the stand, and when he plays, he really gets a hand. And when he plays, he put the cats in his plan.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.